This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, Kent Backus, Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, set to join us. We'll talk some trade issues in a moment. First off, Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA, has the latest on sunflower harvest.
We have had some slow progress on sunflower harvest in our northern production states, but we did have a wide open week in the Dakotas. Big jump from 52 to 72% harvested in South Dakota during the week ending November 12th. And so that puts South Dakota finally ahead of its five-year average pace of 71%. And that helped to boost the national number to 68% of the sunflower harvested by November 12th. That is still behind the five-year average of 72%, way behind last year's 90%.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Kent Backus. Kent is the Executive Director of Government Affairs with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C., and a native Texan. Kent, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Tony, thanks. I really appreciate it.
Well, I don't know really why I threw in the native Texan thing, other than the fact that we always like to talk about things that are Texan related every time we get a chance. But one thing that we're having a hard time kind of wrapping our mind around, whether we're in Texas or Oklahoma, Kansas, even California, is what's going on in D.C. right now. It's hard to get a handle of what's happening. Can you kind of help us out?
Well, I think that's always the concern for those of us who live here, who didn't grow up here, is that this is not normal. And, you really wonder, what's going on with our government sometimes, and, how do you prioritize all these big things that are happening? As we speak, there's a big demonstration, pro-Israel demonstration happening on the National Mall. That's getting a lot of national attention, but the interesting thing that's happening on Capitol Hill is the fact that here we are just, less than 3 days from a potential government shutdown, and you've got all kinds of, strange negotiations and things that are happening to try to avert that. This has to really start with the House of Representatives, and it's been tough to really get a lot of support. We've seen, we've seen a lot of failures so far. And so now, in order to try to kind of get past this looming deadline, they're trying to take what's referred to as a laddered approach to these appropriations bills. They're going to try to combine agriculture and a handful of others in what's basically a continuing resolution. So keeping the spending levels as they currently are, that would go through the end of January. And then on top of that, cobble together all of the other spending bills that would then expire at the beginning of February. So really, this is kind of a stopgap, solution to cobble things together. But included in that short-term extension would be a one-year extension of the farm bill. So there are a lot of balls in the air when it comes to that. But just getting it over the hump in the House is going to be a real challenge. You've got a lot of fiscal conservatives and a lot of, Freedom Caucus members and folks like that who oppose this. So it's questionable whether there will be enough Republican support. So you may actually have to have Democrats work with the new Republican speaker to get enough votes to get this over the line. Now, it looks like the White House and the Democrat-led Senate are going to support that, but there's just a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainty here. And it looks like, if they're unable to get any progress, then we could really see a shutdown leading into Thanksgiving and probably into the beginning of December. So a lot of balls in the air on that, but they're trying to get something done, but it's still uncertain if that's actually going to proceed or how long that would last. Because even if they can get a short-term extension, they're still going to be right back in this situation at the beginning of next year. So I would just say, kind of strap in and be ready for a bumpy ride, whatever the case.
Well, and this is coming at the same time that President Biden is set to meet with the leader of China. Gets me thinking back to a phase one deal that obviously has expired by now, but it brings up the topic of trade. Is there anything going on in the world of trade as far as potential new agreements?
Well, you know, the Biden administration's really tried to push this Indo-Pacific economic framework, which, without getting too far into the weeds, it's not really a trade agreement, but they were trying to work on a trade title that would address some non-tariff barriers. This administration has essentially forfeited any negotiations on tariffs. So as far as new market access or expanded market access, it'd be really tough. But that was supposed to be one of the big hallmarks of this administration, and its foreign policy prowess was delivering this new era of trade. But it looks like, you know, their goal of trying to get this wrapped up this week along the side of the APEC conference, it looks like all that's being dashed, and we're probably going to see this punted till sometime next year. So that's not a ideal situation for the president to be in. Definitely not good for foreign or economic policy, but this is the reality that they face.
Well, and all of this is coming as we get something that I thought was a little confusing, and I'm probably the only one, but a new rule from USDA for beef imports from a South American country. What's happening there?
Yeah, Tony, this is one of those unfortunate situations where, you know, where there's a South American country that has applied for access to the U.S. market. So Paraguay is this example, but there have been others that have also put forward applications. But Paraguay is the latest country that has applied for access, beef access, to the U.S. market. They want to be able to sell here. They want to have that U.S. stamp of approval, that they can go and market that everywhere else in the world and get access into those markets. For us, we have big concerns about this, not because of the volume that could come in, but because Paraguay has a history of foot and mouth disease. This is a country that had a case as recent as 2012. And, you know, this is a country that relies heavily on private sector funding for all of their foot and mouth disease risk mitigation measures. So, you know, USDA approved their application based off of U.S. site visits from 2008 and 2014. So you're talking about the last time U.S. boots were on the ground inspecting the animal health equivalency was over 9 years ago. A lot has happened in 9 years. So what we have asked USDA is to suspend this whole application and suspend their access until we can get recent data and actually confirm and verify what Paraguay is claiming that they can provide. So, you know, it's a big concern. This is definitely a top priority for Paraguay, and the U.S. is trying to negotiate, you know, with these South American countries, kind of win, you know, allies down there. But our concern is that they're going to do it on the backs of U.S. cattle producers and potentially put our herd at risk. So NCBA has been leading the fight to get Secretary Vilsack and the USDA just to put pause on this and do the prudent, responsible thing and base that decision, that final decision, on recent information, not on information from over 9 years ago.
So there's so much going on, and again, trying to wrap our arms around whether it's a trade deal, whether it's opening a market, or whether it's just the general confusion of D.C., if we want to keep up with what's happening with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and your work there, how do we do that?
Well, I think one of the best things that the folks can do is, if you're not a member of your state cattlemen's association, I definitely encourage you to join. I also encourage you to join NCBA. Be part of the solution. You know, we've got our annual convention coming up in February in Orlando. That is a great time to come and be part of the process, be part of that big grassroots organization and network that represents U.S. cattle producers every single day. So I would say that's one way to get involved. Also, be sure to check out our website at ncba.org. We have a lot of information there about a lot of different issues. So I would encourage folks that if you're not already involved, get involved, because your voice matters, and you can't expect the government to do everything that we need them to do without being involved and being vocal and letting them know exactly what's helpful and what's not.
And again, I'm glad you mentioned the Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show. That's coming up January 31st through February 2nd in Orlando. You can find more online, convention.ncba.org. Again, our special guest today, Kent Backus, Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on today's Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report.
USDA's latest report on foreign-owned farmland in the United States shows foreign investors own less than 2% of all land in the country. Danny Munch, American Farm Bureau Federation economist, says foreign owners of farmland are required to report their investments by the Agricultural Foreign Investment Disclosure Act.
USDA publishes the results from those reports from the 2 years prior. So the most recent data we have is 2021 data. In 2021, 40 million acres, or 3.1% of all privately held agricultural land, was owned by foreign investors.
Munch says Canadian investors own the largest portion of foreign-held U.S. farmland,
with almost a third of that, or 0.97% of all U.S. ag land. Following Canada, investors from the Netherlands own 0.37% of U.S. ag land, Italy 0.21%, the United Kingdom 0.19%, and Germany 0.17%. Those five countries make up over half of all U.S. ag land owned by foreign investors.
While a lot of attention regarding foreign-owned farmland is focused on China, the country ranks 18th with 0.03% of foreign investor held land.
A way to look at this is about the size of a single average size county in Ohio. Almost half of all foreign owned ag land in the United States is timberland. In states like Maine, Michigan, Alabama, and Louisiana, over 85% of their foreign owned ag land is all forest land. And when we look at the types of companies, the leading investors are timber and paper companies and renewable energy companies investing in land for solar and wind projects.
Learn more on the market intel page at fb.org. Michael Clement, Washington.
And this is the Agribusiness Report.
Join us at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show November 28th through 30th at the Amarillo Civic Center. Connect with hundreds of exhibitors showcasing the latest ag technology and attend agriculture-focused seminars too. Earn your certification at the Beef Quality Assurance Training or attend livestock education sessions with the Texas Tech School of Veterinary Medicine. Hear from experts at the Cotton Conference, earn CEU credits, or attend the Texas Wheat Symposium. It's all happening at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show. Visit AmarilloFarmShow.com for more information.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest, Kent Backus, Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. You can also register for Cattle Industry Convention online, convention.ncba.org.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
For the winter wheat crop, USDA says things look okay,
except for the condition of the crop in some of our drought-affected areas.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says as far as the planting pace and emergence of the crop,
it's about as normal as you can get.
Growers have planted 93% of the crop, same as the five-year average. 81% of the crop is up. That's within 1% of normal. However, of concern, the condition rating. It's going the wrong way.
We've actually given up some of our gains that we made last week, and we see the crop 47% good to excellent. A week ago, we were sitting at 50%.
Biggest winter wheat producing state, Kansas, with the biggest problems.
33% of the crop there, currently rated very poor to poor. Other states with the very poor to poor ratings above the national number include Oregon, 29%, still some drought pockets there. Texas, 21%.
Nebraska, 18% rated poor to very poor. Gary Crawford, Washington.